The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
A former U.S. Marines veteran and New York City police officer has been sentenced to 10 years in prison.
Dominic Pozzola received a 10-year prison sentence in court today.
U.S. District Judge Amy Berman Jackson called Daniel Rodriguez a, quote, one-man army of hate today at his sentencing hearing. He will serve one of the longest sentences yet, 12.5 years.
Peter Schwartz, a Pennsylvania man, was ordered to serve 170 months in prison. That's 14 years and 2 months.
Zachary Real, president of the Philadelphia chapter of the Proud Boys. He was sentenced to 15 years, less than the 30 prosecutors wanted.
Joe Biggs has been sentenced to 17 years in federal prison.
Execution, 18 years will keep Stuart Rose in prison up to the 2040s.
A judge ordered Enrique Tarrio to serve 22 years, more than two decades, for his role in plotting, planning, and orchestrating the January 6th siege.
Prosecutors were initially seeking 33 years, which is the longest sentence, instead giving him 22 years.
Tarrio wasn't actually in Washington on January 6th, but prosecutors argued he galvanized the Proud Boys.
Wasn't actually there, but he galvanized the protesters, you see. So he's off to prison for 22 years. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We appreciate you joining us on today's show. If you'd like to watch the show every day, live, every weekday morning, it's at 11.05 a.m. in the Central Time Zone of the United States, right at trumpetdaily.com. That's our very own website. And, of course, you can go over to the Rumble channel. If you do that, you've got to give us the thumbs up. Looks like we've already got over 20, so we're doing well. Keep those thumbs up coming. Share the program. Just search for the Trumpet Daily at Rumble. And you can follow along with the show and the live chat and leave a comment if you like. Lots to get to on today's show. And really, you just kind of, at least me, you start the show with a pit in your stomach. To see this happening in the United States of America, to see these protesters, no one, the building didn't go up in flames. No one was murdered except for Ashley Babbitt. And possibly another woman, but she was a Trump supporter. But they've put the Proud Boys behind bars. For what? What did they do? Seditious conspiracy. And in the case of Tarrio, he wasn't even in D.C. And he's going to jail for more than two decades. He galvanized the crowd. You think back four summers ago, who was it that galvanized those thugs that took to the street? What did they call the one Proud Boy? A one-man army of hate. That's what the judge said to him. You're a one-man army of hate. Well, what about the army of hate that destroyed American cities just four summers ago? Listen to this or watch this montage. This is number six.
I want to be clear in how I characterize it. This is mostly a protest. It is not, generally speaking, unruly.
That ain't a riot, what we're seeing right now in Minneapolis.
You know, Brooke, I think this is a march, really.
As they're coming off, it's peaceful. They're saying peaceful protest.
People are risking COVID to explain to this country that we're fed up.
Thank goodness for the looters, man.
I mean, any reasonable person would say we shouldn't be destroying other people's property, but these are not reasonable times.
These people are fighting for their liberty.
You know, there needs to be unrest in the streets for as long as there's unrest in our lives.
They're not going to stop. And this is a movement, I'm telling you. They're not going to stop. And everyone beware, because they're not going to stop. They're not going to stop before Election Day in November, and they're not going to stop after Election Day.
And please, show me where it says that protests are supposed to be polite and peaceful.
You want to know who galvanized those rioters, those thugs? In some cases, those murderers. Who galvanized them? That would be the regime media. Those talking heads that you just heard there in those sound bites. One of them, the fake vice president of the United States. Nancy Pelosi, for her part, she said, I just don't see why there aren't uprisings all across the nation. How can you forget Mad Maxine calling for violence? AOC, she did the same thing. And they got it. I mean, the soldiers took to the streets and they burned cities down and they looted businesses. In some cases, they've been shuttered ever since. Tario is not even in D.C. on the day of the protest. January 6, 2021. He's not even there, but hey, he sent some text messages. And what was going on in his thinking? Let's get him for a thought crime. They got him because he's the leader of Proud Boys. And Proud Boys, that's the enemy. We've been hearing ever since this fake administration was installed, we've been hearing about the threat of white supremacy, the threat of domestic terrorism. And they're going, listen, we talked about lawfare in this particular issue. Well, we've written about it elsewhere as well. Who's winning? Who's winning in this offensive lawfare? Well, look at how many people they're sending off to jail. It's unbelievable that this is happening in the United States of America. If you want to know what it was like to live in the very early stages of the Bolshevik Revolution, we're seeing it. This is a communist takeover of the United States, and they're putting people, the opposition, behind bars. People that haven't done anything. Maybe they stole a police shield. Maybe they moved a barricade. Okay, if they smashed a window, then get them on a vandalism charge. How many people who galvanized those rioters 4 summers ago, how many of them are behind bars? Maxine Waters? The AOC, is she behind bars for that? They justified. They encouraged the violence. They did it openly. They did it on the air. No one ever sued them. No one ever took them to court. But look at all these lawsuits happening in D.C. You think Donald Trump's going to get a fair shake in D.C.? Consider the lawfare. Donald John Trump, former president of the United States, charged with 91 felonies. Not one other ex-president has ever been charged with a felony. Not Bill Clinton, not George W. Bush, not Barack Obama, certainly not the dear leader. But 91 counts, 4 indictments. A former president of the United States of America. Mark Meadows. What was he? The chief of staff? A former chief of staff at the White House. Indicted. Yeah, he's indicted too. Rudy Giuliani, America's mayor. Hero following the tragedy of 9/11. The whole nation practically looking to him for leadership. He's indicted. Yeah, he's indicted. Thought crimes about the 2020 election. Jenna Ellis, right along there with him. She's a sharp lawyer. What about John, what is it, Eastman? Perhaps America's foremost constitutional scholar. Indicted. He's indicted too. That's right. Sidney Powell, another famous lawyer, attorney. You can't give advice or counsel to Donald John Trump. You're indicted too. And then you saw the list of the protesters. Tario, 22 years. Rhodes, 18 years. Biggs, 17 years. Rail, 15 years. Schwartz, 14 years. Rodriguez, 12 years. Meigs, 12 years. Pozzola, Webster, 10 years each. They've arrested 950 protesters that were at the January 6th protest. 900, it's the largest investigation in the history of the DOJ. 382 people are prisoners waiting for a trial. They haven't even been given a trial yet. It's been 2.5 years. And yet look at these judges, these corrupt judges, just rushing Donald Trump's indictments and all of the, you've seen that we've played them here. next year's calendar. He's going to be he's going to be in court here in March, right before Super Tuesday. Then he's going to be in court here. I mean, they're talking about it like it's a playoff game with a sport. So excited, so giddy. Their team is winning. Well, as far as Lawfare goes, they are winning. Clearly, I saw, this is a little bit unrelated. I guess Tucker Carlson, he's got the interview with this guy that said he had a homosexual affair with Barack Obama in 1999. I saw this tweet from a rhino who said, I don't like this. I don't like this. Barack Obama, he's no longer in office. Hello. Neither is Donald Trump. Look at what they're doing to him. Anyway, he's no longer in office. He's a family man. Tucker shouldn't be interviewing him and getting this guy's story. Okay, so, you know, that's... But look at the country we're living in. Look at the persecution that this communist radical left levels at the opposite side. I mean, they go for the jugular. And there's just not... There are not any prosecutors or AGs on the other side that go after the communist left. Look at this from, this is Andrew Weissman. Tario, he's going away for 22 years, and they're all excited now because, hey, we got a leader who wasn't even at the protest. He's going to jail for 22 years, so this can't be good for Donald Trump. He wasn't at the protest either, but hey, he's the top dog. He's the leader of it all. This is not good news for Donald Trump. Listen to clip two.
This is not a good thing for Donald Trump. I have said this repeatedly. It's obviously just a prediction. But for the judges in D.C., like Judge Chutkan, who have seen all of these January 6 cases, the leaders of the Proud Boys and the Oath Keepers doing significant time, the idea that the general, the person, as you have pointed out, Nicole, who is alleged to have led this and for whom they were acting, the idea that Donald Trump will not be sentenced to jail if he is convicted seems remote to me, because the judges are living through this and seeing all of these other defendants. And it's anathema, I think, to them and the rule of law that people who are underlings would get this kind of sentence and that the leader would not.
There's this tweet going around on social media. This guy who raped teenage girls, preteens in some cases, raped them. He was sentenced to 180 days in jail, in prison. Half a year. Tario doesn't go to the January 6th protest, and he's off to prison for 22 years. Go and look for a list of murderers in Washington, D.C. That's where so many of these courts are. And a lot of them, they're the same judge. That Timothy guy, I mean, he's handing down a stiff sentence. If you were at a pro-Trump protest, go down the list of murderers in D.C. and see how many of them go off to prison for more than 22 years. I haven't even researched it. I haven't even looked into it. How many of these hardened criminals are let off with a sentence of 5, maybe 6, 7 years, if even that? And then they return to the streets. You would think the Proud Boys are like Al-Qaeda or ISIS or something. Didn't even go to the protest. He was nowhere around D.C. at the time. But they got him. They got him. You think they're going to stop there? You think they're going to stop with all of those? I mean, they've got it, whether it's the indictments or the sentences. A former White House chief of staff? The foremost constitutional scholar in America? Yeah, it doesn't matter who you are. Well, in some ways it does. If you are on the opposition, they'll go after you. Listen to this from CNN. You think they're satisfied with, 950 that they've arrested? Do you think they're in any way concerned about the 382 that still haven't gotten a trial? They're languishing in the D.C. gulag? CNN says, on Tuesday, District Judge Timothy Kelly, that's his name, sentenced Proud Boys former chairman Enrique Tarrio to 22 years in prison after last week handing down terms of 17 years, 15 years, and 18 years, respectively, to Proud Boy leaders Joseph Biggs, Zachary Rail, and Ethan Nordin. You wonder, what is the Supreme Court thinking? This is happening just right down the street. It's right there in D.C. Timothy Kelly is his name. He's just putting people behind bars right and left. They're not murderers. They didn't burn down buildings. They didn't loot anything. They didn't hurt anybody. But you see, Tarrio sent a couple text messages, and we've been told that white supremacy terrorism, that's the greatest threat facing the United States right now. This article says the convictions of four of the group's senior members on seditious conspiracy. There's never any details about what they actually did. It's just this all-encompassing term, seditious conspiracy, are a victory for democracy and the rule of law. This is CNN. They're cheering it, just like they cheered on the rioters in 2020. CNN says these sentences, some of the longest in the cases against those behind the Capitol breach, hold accountable the leaders of a neo-fascist street gang that served as the tip of the spear on January 6th. So it's a street gang, you see, Proud Boys. Now, what about all those street gangs that were even terrorizing the occupants of the White House four summers ago? That injured more than 50 Secret Service members. What about that street gang? Who galvanized those gangs? CNN says, however, as we creep closer to another presidential election, it is difficult to argue that the domestic terrorism threat is any less significant. They've sent all these Proud Boys off to prison, and here comes CNN saying, I think the threat's even worse. I don't think it's going to help the problem. The white supremacy and domestic terror, it's so pervasive that this is not going to solve the problem at all, sending these guys off to jail for 22 years. It says here, the massive intelligence failures that led to the attack on the Capitol are a worrying microcosm of a long, stagnant government response to an increasingly decentralized online and mainstreamed domestic terrorism threat. It says here, here's the domestic terrorism boogeyman. It's everywhere. It's everywhere. And CNN brought some stats. We'll get to that in just a second. Chilling stats from CNN's perspective. It says here, the inability to recognize the warning signs of an insurrection planned in plain sight should have led to a sea change in the federal approach to countering domestic terror. You see, arresting 950 Americans, it's not enough as far as CNN is concerned. Getting rid of the top tier leadership of the Proud Boys, it's not enough. Indicting Donald Trump four times, 91 felony count, not enough. This is the way these people think. You talk about chilling. People actually think this way, and they work at CNN, and they work at the Department of Justice, and they work over at MSNBC. They work for the New York Times. It says here, yet beyond the Justice Department and FBI's disruption and prosecution of groups like the Proud Boys, the government's response has been largely anemic. Can you believe this? It's not enough, 950. It should be 2,000, should be 3,000. I mean, if you can get someone who galvanized protesters, you can go after anyone that sends a message or posts something on Facebook or Twitter. And you better believe they're looking into that. They are going after those kinds of voices. It says there is little question that right-wing extremism, particularly white supremacist extremism, is currently the deadliest, and listen to this, the deadliest and most pervasive domestic terrorism threat facing the United States. It's just a complete and total lie. You've got these Proud Boy guys in court that are groveling before the judge. I renounce my views about the election steal. I'm never going to be political again. Please, judge, have mercy on me. Give me a lighter sentence. Nope, off for 22 years. I don't care if you apologize. Data produced by the Anti-Defamation League paints a clear and damning picture of the realities of the threat from 2013 to 2022. So here comes the data. It's a 10-year window, a 10-year period. Just make note of that. It says right-wing extremists committed 75% of the extremist-related murders in the United States, compared to 20% for Islamist extremists and 4% for left-wing extremists. Wow, it says later, nearly one in four of these right-wing extremist killings were committed in the name of white supremacist terrorism, a staggering, here we come to the money stat, a staggering 251 total deaths. This is over a 10-year period. Now, no homicide is justified. I'm not suggesting that. No act of violence is. But over a 10-year period, in a nation of 330 million people, in a nation where there's, 16, 17,000 murders per year, there were like 50 murdered in the summer of 2020. And you think race might have motivated some of that violence? I mean, a lot of it was black on black, but they took to the streets because of George Floyd. Because America was racist, a racist nation, and quite a few victims got caught in the crossfire. They were urged, take to the streets, commit acts of violence. Remember the retired police officer who went to help his friend's place of business because looters were outside? He went out there and he got shot in the head. Died there on the sidewalk. Served his country. 250, look at how they play with and massage the statistics. You would expect it from CNN. No perspective. Just throw percentages out there and pretend that the black on white violence is never, never, never racially motivated. Certainly not. It says here, from a spike in threats against public officials to an embrace. Let me back up. It says, in this period of resurgence, white supremacists and anti-government actors have embraced a decentralized model driven by narratives, not group membership, limiting the effectiveness of individual prosecutions. We send them all off to prison, yeah, but listen, it's decentralized now. And the white supremacists, the racists, they're all over the place. So how are we going to stop this? I think this might be building to a massive explosion of civil disobedience, rioting in the streets, race wars, all the things your Bible has something to say about. It says here, from a spike in threats against public officials to an embrace of anti-LGBTQ hostility, right-wing political violence has increasingly been adopted by individuals unaffiliated with organized groups and instead, listen to this, inspired by hateful and dehumanizing rhetoric. You see, it's the people that spread words that we need to go after next. CNN sees all that's happening. Biggest DOJ investigation in history, 950 Americans arrested, the Proud Boys pretty much wiped out. CNN sees all of that and begs for more totalitarianism. Can you believe it? They want the boot of Uncle Sam on every neck that would dare say something they consider to be angry rhetoric. Or dangerous rhetoric, hateful rhetoric. It says here, the federal government, however, long clung to antiquated war on terror era threat assessments and counterterrorism frameworks. These shortcomings demonstrate a lack of political will by the executive branch to make hard choices and expend political capital to combat domestic terrorism. See, Joe Obama's not gone far enough, not nearly far enough. It's really incredible and frightening to just read an article like this. I don't make a habit of it, believe me. CNN, all these propagandists. But how revealing is this? How frightening that there are people at a famous and influential news agency that think this way. This is the way they think. You wonder if we're even at the early stages of a Bolshevik revolution. We're quite a ways, I think we're deep into it at this stage. He wasn't even in Washington, D.C. the day of the protest, but they got him because he galvanized people. He galvanized them, you see. It says the wave of violence in recent years has left no doubt of what the future holds if indecision and passivity approaches to this threat and passive approaches to this threat continue. It says to avoid another violent insurrection in January 2024, it is essential to move beyond antiquated war on terror era approaches and acknowledge the new realities of the domestic terrorism threat. Just think for a moment what happens and how this guy's tune changes. If Donald Trump wins next November, and there is any, you think the radical left's going to take that sitting down? If there's any kind of violent insurrection in January of 2024, let's just predict that it's going to be coming from this guy's side, this guy's soldiers, because CNN is not going to accept, they've already said as much. If Donald Trump gets in there, it'll be because of Russian interference, obviously. They've already given us the playbook. They've already telegraphed their position that if Donald Trump wins in November of 2024, he will be an illegitimate president. And there will, as you heard from one of the clips I played for you last week, there will never be a U.S. presidential election again. So, well, we have to take to the streets. We have to commit acts of violence. We have to bring down the totalitarian regime. It's frightening, as I say, when you think of people in high places who think like this. In this lawfare that's going on, who's winning at the moment? It's pretty obvious, isn't it? It certainly is. My father has said, Donald Trump's got to be ready for war. He's one of the few that has the resources to punch back. They're trying to get him on a, what is the thing with the mugshot? It's so predictable. He's made, what, $7 million because of the mugshot on T-shirts and things like that. They're flying off the shelves. It says here, within three days, from the New York Post, within 3 days, the Trump campaign made $7.1 million off the merchandise, which included T-shirts, mugs, koozies, and bumper stickers. But legal scholars say that money may rightfully belong to the Fulton County Sheriff's Office. They'll find some way to bring another lawsuit, another indictment. He's violating copyright law. The way they're treating this man as if the money belongs to Fulton County, this corrupt county that steals elections and that brings indictments on former presidents. I bet there's some police officers in that county jail that are quietly applauding what Donald Trump is doing to just fight back. But you got to do it quietly, because if you do it openly, they'll come after you. You certainly don't want to be guilty of galvanizing a MAGA supporter. I played this clip from Eric Bolling at Newsmax. Well, it's part of this little montage. Listen to the disclaimers. This is on Newsmax. This is not as prominent as CNN, but it's right up there with the big four or five, I guess. This is clip one.
Okay, folks, before moving on, I want to make something clear. Last Thursday, Rudy Giuliani made some unfortunate allegations against Georgia Governor Brian Kemp. Mayor Giuliani's claims are unproven. Newsmax has no evidence that Governor Kemp broke any laws, and they wanted to make that clear. I thank you, Newsmax.
Thank you. Thanks. And great job. Great success. You're doing a fantastic job.
Thank you, Mr. President. Thank you. All right, folks, now just a note, Newsmax has accepted the election results as legal and final.
How embarrassing. All those disclaimers. They're so terrified of lawfare because they know the communist left. They know the communist left comes after you. The communist left at this moment is trying to get President Trump disqualified from even being on the ballot, even being in the election, based on the 14th Amendment, which says that the violent insurrection, they have no proof. It's not even in Jack Smith's indictment. There is no insurrection. They're going after him on these novel legal theories. But here you have all the talking heads, whether on CNN, Democrats in Congress, wherever, 14th Amendment, he's the leader of an insurrection. They have no evidence of that. They have no proof of that. How many times do they have disclaimers? Because there's a conservative outfit somewhere saying, if you libel me, if you slander me, if you smear me, I'm coming after you. I'm coming after you like you go after Rudy Giuliani. Here, Donald Trump, an ex-president of the United States, he's having this nice cordial exchange with a fairly conservative reporter, compliments him at the end, but he made the mistake in that interview of saying that the election was stolen in 2020, and you can't say that. It's kind of like galvanizing someone with a text message. Those people on the communist left, they are out for blood. It's so obvious. And when 2 Kings 14 says that the Jeroboam, the end time Jeroboam, has to war to recover what is rightfully his, it means war. The communist left has declared war on Donald Trump and anyone who would dare support him. This is from an article we had last summer. Says, yet the lawlessness of today's lawyers is on a far more radical scale. It says, far from being a conservative influence, lawyers are more liberal than the median voter. And those who train the next generation of lawyers, the law professors, are overwhelmingly left-wing, favoring all sorts of foolish innovations, from abolition of prisons to, except when it comes to Proud Boys, build prisons for them, for sure. Never mind all the homicides going on right now in D.C. and in Fulton County. How many of those murderers get 22 years, at least 22 years behind bars? It says here, a great change has taken place in America that has transformed lawyers from guardians of the Republic to waging lawfare against the Republic. Lawfare, just like my father has written, instead of seeing the Constitution as the guiding document, it is seen as the enemy. Now a majority of lawyers have become agents of the radical left deep state, implementing an agenda to fundamentally transform the United States of America. It's all part of Barack Hussein Obama's fundamental transformation of the United States. It is interesting, though, as all of this plays out in courts, with indictments, sentencing. It is interesting to me that Barack Obama, the dear leader, he's being exposed. He's being exposed. You've got a pretty, the fact, even though it's an old story, 24 years ago, but it was covered up for the most part in 2008. Barack Obama was never vetted. And so, okay, a few people heard about the rumor and maybe it circulated on social media. But this guy accusing Obama of this behavior, now suddenly he's sitting down with Tucker Carlson and the video may well reach hundreds of millions of people. And there's more to come, I'm sure. Look at what's happened in just the past few months. Barack Obama being exposed as a fraud, as a phony, as a fake. David Garrow's book, that sit down, the tablet interview, all of that comes to mind. He is the Antiochus, the Jeroboam type definitely has a fight on his hands. The Antiochus type is being exposed. That much is clear. For much more on both of those prophesied individuals, make sure that you call our operators today and request America Under Attack. The 800 number, it's 1-866-930-3024. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is The Trumpet Daily. If you'd like to email the show, you can reach us at td@thetrumpet.com. If you're at Rumble, make sure you give us the thumbs up. And don't forget about the LFA TV replay every weekday evening, 8 p.m. Central, 9 p.m. on the East Coast. My Twitter handle, if you'd like it, is @StephenFleury, Stephen with a P-H. We'll be right back.
Freedom is one of the most sought-after ideals in human history. Man's search for freedom has taken him into the fiercest of protests, struggles, revolutions, civil wars, and even world wars. Today, in the midst of free societies, many continue to fight for what they perceive as ever greater freedoms. And yet, many of these same people are actively fighting against law. Few people understand that this war against law actually undermines true freedom. To learn more, request Gerald Fleury's booklet, No Freedom Without Law. In this free booklet, you will see what the Bible says about the latter-day spirit of rebellion and lawlessness that is now so common in our nations today. Also request America Under Attack. In this booklet, you will learn more about the spirit behind this attack on law. You'll see where this is leading. Both booklets are offered freely at no cost or obligation to you. Request No Freedom Without Law and America Under Attack. Email your request to td@kpcg.fm or visit thetrumpet.com.
First of all, we are not done with COVID. We know that.
We will be encouraging, as I have said before, Americans to get their updated COVID-19 vaccines. We know that these vaccines work, right? We know when people stay up to date with their vaccine, that works.
Who needs to get a booster and when?
So all of us need boosters. So at 6 months of age and up, we're going to have boosters by the end of this month.
As you can see, Whoopi is not here. She has COVID. Yes, it's back. It's back.
It's back.
President Biden tested negative last night for COVID-19 and tested negative again today. He's not experiencing any symptoms. Since the president was with the First Lady yesterday, he will be masking while indoors and around people.
Act of service to the nation and his comrades in arms.
Yesterday, he will be masking while indoors and around people.
No mask in this other video as he was leaving that event. Not sure why he would need one to go in that exact way, but not to leave.
I mean, we all know that this mask thing is a complete joke, and it's
virtue signaling. You were seeing quite a few Democrat leaders, not just in the White House, but also at the state and local levels, trying to reinstitute mask mandates, even with all of the evidence
we will not comply.
That mask mandates don't work.
There you go. Just in time for the next presidential election. We've got the COVID scaremongering in full force from the radical left. And notice, too, I think in the View exchange, it's kind of a got COVID, funny, funny, chuckle, chuckle. Well, if it's so deadly, if everybody from 6 months up needs a booster shot, it seems like they would have a more, you know, serious, but the same games. It's the same games this time around. The fake press lady, she announces that the fake president's going to be wearing a mask indoors at all times. And within minutes, it seems, he was taking his mask off. Huge gathering at the White House. And he's pulling the mask off and then touching his mouth. There you go. A little bit of 2020, a flashback to 2020 for you. Trying to use this to scare people and to get state officials to change election laws behind closed doors. But listen, don't you dare suggest it, don't you dare suggest that Brian Kemp might be compromised because of Stacey Abrams. If you do that on Newsmax, they're going to come out with a disclaimer just to protect themselves. They don't want the radical left coming after them using lawfare. If there's one thing they're good at, the radical left, they're not so good with just the strategy. I mean, they just recycle things over and again, but they are good at going after their enemies, their opponents, their political opponents. It's building to an explosion. It's interesting, this City Journal kind of ties in with this City Journal piece. The present at the destruction, it says here. There's quite a few articles. There's more and more articles like that see that America is at a point of just completely collapsing. And it says here in this piece, the old American Republic is collapsing and a new American Republic as yet unrecognizable is under construction. That's the opening line of The Fourth Turning is Here. It says it also foreshadows the odd dualistic theme that seems to run not only through the book's pages, but through the very air of our national moment. Institutions of imminent doom and destruction, intimations of hope and renewal, one world dying, another struggling to be born. We sense that serious change of one kind or another is coming, and soon. Howe's book tries to tell us why that is and why we should find cause for optimism. Listen to this paragraph. I'm not sure if this guy's book is a new book or what. I've never heard of it, but it says here, Howe begins by describing an American malaise that most readers here will likely need little convincing is our present reality. A government that can no longer carry out even the most basic tasks of governance. Rock-bottom public trust among the American people and in institutions more broadly. Hyper-partisanship, high economic inequality, declining public health, moral and legal chaos, strife between the sexes, and a collapse of family formation and birth rates. It says here, all these and more, says Howe, were predictable circumstances. They are also, he declares, almost certain to turn soon for the better. Winter is here, but spring is coming. And so there are articles like this that point to the fact that, I mean, you see them on Twitter from time to time. They'll refer to the so-called greatest generation coming out of World War II. I mean, they were fighters. They fought against tyranny, and then they came home, and it led to this, you know, this prosperous age in American history. And there are some that actually say that's what's happening. We're at a low point, but look, I mean, the real courageous warriors to come out of this can lead us to victory, can lead us to peace and prosperity. The solutions, you see, that so many people or organizations have, they're rooted in human beings, not in God. Again, and I've said these verses so many times, but Jeremiah 10, 23 and 24, where the prophet prays there that it's not in man to think and direct his own steps. We need help. Jeremiah 17, 5 says, don't put your trust in a man, not even in yourself, certainly not yourself. Put your trust, your faith in God. Notice this conclusion to this City Journal piece. It says, and yet Howe is relentless in his cheerful optimism. There's nothing wrong with being cheerfully optimistic. We do need hope. Our hope is in the Word of God. Our hope is in the resurrection. Our hope is in the return of Christ. He says here, by the 2040s, once we've passed through this crucible, all the trends we now lament will have reversed themselves and will enter a glorious new future as a nation transformed. The malaise will lift. Political gridlock and dysfunction will disappear. So and on it goes. But imagine putting your hope in that. We'll come out of this at some point. We'll save ourselves. Or maybe the Jeroboam type, maybe he'll lead the way. Well, God says he is coming back, but it's not because of our righteousness. It's not because we've really pleased God. If you look at the sins of our nation, look at just, I mean, you can take World War II, that generation, but, you know, you could also argue that the World War II era, that's Mr. Armstrong in The Missing Dimension in Sex says that this is, after this is when, you know, you had this post-war relaxation in morals. The floodgates lifted. All of this knowledge about sex, I mean, before the war era, you really didn't even have much in the way of teaching and instruction on family relations, on marriages, on how to make marriages work, how to make them happy. In a lot of ways, the two world wars disrupted everything in our society. There may have been some prosperity and ease to follow that horrific struggle. But look at what was happening morally in the 1950s, in the 1960s. Look at the change, the great changes that took place in our society, our culture. And look at where we are today. I've talked about, if you go back even before the wartime era, certainly there were courageous fighters. I mean, the thought of getting off at Normandy Beach and just running into, you know, bullets coming from every direction, that would have been terrifying. If we're an 18-year-old boy, you go back before that, as I covered on yesterday's show, just the many sacrifices made by young men rallying around George Washington, our first commander-in-chief, who made real sacrifices for the nation, who saved the nation, or ensured that there would even be one. How many people appreciate that history and are thankful for what happened before? God, the Bible says, with respect to God, rejoice in the Lord. Always, always bring that spirit of thankfulness and gratitude. Herbert Armstrong said that one of the more common sins is that of ingratitude, just not appreciating what you've been given or what went before. I talked yesterday about the importance of building on a strong foundation and how important, too, it is to be goal-oriented, just pulling a few lessons from that history surrounding Valley Forge. Another one we could add to that is to come out of the world. There's a lesson in that for us as well, because, as I said yesterday, you had the British troops in Philadelphia, about an hour away from Valley Forge, and then surrounding Valley Forge, you had a lot of farmers that were really more sympathetic to the British cause than they were to the American cause. And so here were these young men, in a literal sense. I mean, they were out of the world. They were alone in this valley. And it was a brutal winter, as I said yesterday. 2,000 of Washington's troops died just from disease. They didn't have supplies. They didn't have funding. They kept busy. They were training, thanks to Washington. But they made real sacrifices so that this nation could be established. Come out of this world. You see examples in the Bible. You see examples in history. Certainly you think of one like Winston Churchill, another great example of someone that just stood alone. Washington, in a lot of ways, stood alone. That takes some courage. That takes some faith. I told you about the little farmhouse, his headquarters yesterday, the tiny little house. And you're lining up 20 to 25 people each night to sleep there as well? 1 John 2 and verse 13, it says, I write unto you, fathers, because you have known him that is from the beginning. I write unto you, young men, because you have overcome the wicked one. I write unto you, little children, because you have known the Father. So here's John in his epistle giving some loving admonition for all of us. Fathers, children, mothers. It says in verse 15, love not the world, neither the things that are in the world. If any man love the world, the love of the Father is not in him. Put your love, your heart, your trust, your faith in God. Love God with your whole heart. Deuteronomy 30 and verse 20, I think it is. Paul, when he was in Athens, he said to worship God with your whole heart. He's our life, Paul said. He's our being, our everything. It says, for all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh and the lust of the eyes and the pride of life is not of the Father, but of the world. All of it, God says, and the world passes away, verse 17, and the lust thereof. But he that doeth the will of God abides forever. Here is your real strength. Here is your life. If you want to abide forever, carry out God's will. It's like I said in a lecture recently. I mean, all that this church is doing and building, that's the hope for this world. Now, most in the world don't know that yet. But this is the world's only hope. What God is building, what God is raising up, what God is out there proclaiming and promoting, and everything else out there is of this world. And read what your Bible says about this world. Revelation 12:9. Read verse 12 as well. 2 Corinthians 4 and verse 4. Satan is subtle and he's deceived. He's deceived the whole world into thinking that, well, there's quite a bit about this world that's pretty good. Well, more and more. I mean, if you were saying that maybe in the 1980s, it may have been difficult to just receive Mystery of the Ages in the mail, to take that example. Mr. Armstrong writes this book, says that the world's deceived. Here's what God is doing and building. Maybe it would have been easier back then to just sort of dismiss that message and say, well, but, you know, there is a lot about this world that's really pretty good. Look at how, here's the United States of America, the greatest, most prosperous, most powerful nation in the history of the world. And look at what's happening to this nation, as I covered in the first segment. God says, come out of this world. Come out and be separate. You can read that at the end of 2 Corinthians 6. Revelation 18 and verse 4 says, come out from among them. One last point, I'll have to make it quickly. Another lesson from Valley Forge is to rejoice in the small beginning. That was the beginning of the U.S. military. What was happening there in the winter of 1777 and 78. That was, in many ways, the beginning of the United States. I mean, we had had the Declaration and all that, but, I mean, that was the beginning. We had to win that war, or else there would have been no America. Don't despise the day of small beginnings. I'll let you look at Zechariah 4, verses 6 through 10, where it says that God is the one. It's when he's building something through human beings, yes, it starts in the smallest of ways. It's a mustard seed beginning. You can read about that in Matthew 13. But don't despise that small beginning, because the mustard seed continues to grow. And of course, we've been here long enough, 33 plus years on this campus, I mean, to where we can look at what God has done on this campus and even around the world and see magnificent, fruitful growth. It's going to continue growing like that right on into the world tomorrow, where there's going to be educational institutions like what's here on this campus all over the earth. Your Bible says so. Get that booklet by Herbert Armstrong, The Wonderful World Tomorrow, What It Will Be Like. There's also quite a lot about God's coming kingdom in the 7th chapter of Mystery of the Ages as well. You can get to all of that literature at our 800 number, 1-866-930-3024, or our website, thetrumpet.com. If you'd like to email the show, td@thetrumpet.com. Don't forget to give us the Rumble thumbs up. Don't forget the Twitter handle, @StephenFlurry with a PH. And don't forget to join us on tomorrow's show. You are listening to Stephen Flurry, and this is The Trumpet Daily. We'll see you tomorrow.